Dr. McGee, everywhere you turn today, there's talk about the environmental crisis. You can't drive your car, wash your clothes, buy a soft drink, or even plan to get married without being afraid that you might hurt the environment.
Yes, complexity is the name of the environmental game. Everything and everyone is involved. This is what makes the whole problem so confusing. When there is a multitude of elements, it is more difficult to know where to begin in understanding the problem. It's like one of those circular jigsaw puzzles. There are no corner pieces to begin with in putting everything together.
This may be the reason many people are despairing in the face of the problem. I know that it frustrates me to discover that so many things that I've taken for granted as natural parts of my life are a threat to man's continued existence on Earth.
This frustration that we all share requires that we find a place to begin. It seems to me that at the most basic level, we're confronted with the problem of balancing the world's population with the world's resources.
It's certainly true that one side of that equation, the population, is growing more rapidly than the other side. Isn't the world's population going to double within the next 35 years?
That's the projected estimate. The frightening aspect of this is that the Earth's resources for meeting our needs cannot grow that rapidly. Indeed, some of our resources are fixed and cannot be expanded.
Yes, I guess you mean things such as air, water, and space. That means there's only one thing to do, and that's control the population growth.
Certainly, that's a large part of our task. But it may be the most difficult part. Historically, most cultural values encourage childbearing. It's certainly true that the Judeo-Christian tradition has exalted procreation as one of life's most meaningful experiences. It is this background that discourages many in their hopes for voluntary population control.
What about involuntary control?
That's what some are predicting. This could be, of course, either through governmental control or through natural controls.
I can't imagine the government limiting the number of children you could have.
It is difficult to imagine that, but I'm sure that this will be a very live issue within the next few years. Of course, there are many ways in which a society, through its government, can discourage couples having children.
Even if we brought the population growth under control, we still have problems. For example, even with the present population, almost half of the world's people are undernourished.
Yes, and this brings us to the other side of the equation, the Earth's resources. There is need for both more efficient use of what we have and a more equitable distribution of those usable sources we produce.
But how does all of this relate to pollution? You know, air and water pollution is what everyone's talking about.
Well, one of the Earth's resources is its capacity to recycle the waste products of our living. This purification or recycling process takes place in our air and water and soil. We have overloaded these systems through population growth and through careless waste disposal.
I suppose the same thing has happened with noise pollution. There's too much noise to be absorbed comfortably in the space that we have.
Yes, it's all a matter of using up the Earth's capacity to recycle our waste products.
When we face the limited resources of the Earth, can't we just expand the resources through technological advances? For example, we can replace metal or wood with plastics, or we can increase the world's food supply through more scientific farming, and even by producing food in laboratories.
Yes, but this raises one of the most hotly debated questions within the current environmental crisis. The question is, can technology save us? Many environmentalists say no. They contend that man's dependence upon technology is one of the primary causes of the current crisis.
I can see how that would be. Our industry, the automobile, all of these technological advances are prime contributors to the problem.
Yes, And because they are, many argue that our only hope for survival is to stop depending so much on technology and return to a harmony with nature. That is, we should depend on the natural processes of the universe and not on the artificial creations of man.
Well, what would we do with all of the scientific discoveries? We can't just ignore what our science and technology have developed.
Yes, and for that reason, I think that in the final analysis, most people will agree that in making peace with our environment, we have to acknowledge that technology is a part of that environment. If we begin there, then we can look at both nature and technology as resources to be valued and used responsibly.
When you talk about man's using nature, it sounds like the old line of man's conquering nature. I read an article the other day which blamed the Christian ethic for teaching us that nature was man's tool. You know, the thou shalt have dominion bit.
Yes, one of the distinctions that is made is a distinction between the anthropocentric view of life and a biocentric view. What you have just described is the anthropocentric view, where man is viewed as a central figure in the universe, and all of creation is to serve him.
The biocentric opposing view contends that all of life has value in itself. Albert Schweitzer and St. Francis of Assisi had this kind of reverence for all of life.
Yes, both of these are often cited as having a healthier appreciation of all life by not exalting man to the position of conqueror. The problem comes when you have to make choices among the various expressions of life. For example, if man is to survive, he must eat, and his food must come from other life. Or there are those times when we have to make a value judgment about various aspects of life. We can appreciate bacterial growth in our stomachs that are a part of the digestive process. But when the bacterial growth is in our lungs and threatens to become pneumonia, we try to kill it.
Then we don't have a reverence for all life. Somehow I appreciate the example of those like St. Francis, who loved all of nature.
There is a strong tradition in Christian history which values all of creation, but it never worships nature, nor does it subject man to a fatalistic acceptance of whatever nature does to him. Nature, rather, is a gift from God and is to be valued and protected. It is also to be used responsibly in meeting the needs of all men.
Then man is to conquer nature and subdue it.
No, not quite, because that implies that man does whatever he wants to with nature. Rather, I think that man is to cooperate with nature in securing good for mankind. There is much to be learned from nature because it reflects God's love for man. After all, the overall natural process does favor man's existence. Indeed, it supports our existence on this earth. We should not view nature as an enemy to be conquered, but as a good gift for which we are responsible.
If we are responsible, what are we to do with it?
Well, the God of the Christian faith is described as having one consuming love, and that is his love for man. If we're loyal to him, I believe that our ultimate concern in the use of the earth's resources will be to see that they serve the needs of our fellow man. This means that we will value these resources and conserve them.
Then you think that the Christian ethic is not to be blamed for the environmental crisis?
Well, I'm not sure that we can get off that easily. There is one element in the theological tradition of many Christians that has caused problems. It has created a disdain for nature and therefore a neglect of nature. I refer to the dualistic view which separates body from soul and flesh from spirit and therefore man from nature. This dualism came into the church mainly from some Greek sources. It tends to disvalue the material or natural world. Indeed, it often attributes evil to the material and goodness to the spiritual. From this perspective, it was easy to develop an attitude that nature is to be conquered or put down. At best, it was neglected while we took care of spiritual matters.
Is this dualistic view the biblical view? For example, Paul writes about the men of the spirit and the men of the flesh.
Yes, he does, but the difference between those two men, as described by Paul, was that the spiritual man was the one who was in harmony with God, and the fleshly man was the one who was out of harmony with God. It was not a matter of nature or flesh being evil and spirit being good. As a matter of fact, the biblical view is best described as holistic. That is, man is a total entity, and you can't separate him into distinct parts. In the same way, you cannot separate man from his total environment. In Genesis 2, God is described as making man from the dust of the earth. Therefore, man is viewed as being an integral part of all of creation.
That sounds very much like what many environmentalists say, and they say that there is a symbiotic relationship between man and his environment.
Yes, and for that reason, we must appreciate and cooperate with all of our environment, but not be a slave to any one portion of it.
What do you see as the basic responsibilities of the Christian in the current environmental crisis?
I would suggest two basic responsibilities. They have to do with both sides of the equation I mentioned earlier. First, we must limit population growth. We must do this out of respect for human life. Therefore, our efforts to limit population do not reflect a devaluation of human life, but rather a commitment to preserve and enrich human life. Finally, we must give more attention to the resources side of the equation. We have been far too wasteful. We have not distributed the earth's resources fairly among all men. Now it is imperative that we love our environment even as we love ourselves. Indeed, we are caring for ourselves and our neighbors as we care for our environment. In all of this, we see the environment as the setting and the source of our lives. It is a gracious gift from God, which we use to further God's purpose, that all men have life and have it more abundant.